Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Thursday, July 16th. Hope you're doing well. Today's a Feast of Our Lady of Carmel, also the anniversary of the last apparition of Lourdes to St. Bernadette Soubirous. And there is an online event, a big one going on in Lourdes, a big conference. We'll have a report on it. But just a reminder that EWTN is carrying some of the events, including the Mass. So check out our website, as always, EWTN.com. Coming up at 15 minutes past the hour, Dr. Priscilla Coleman is going to be joining us. I haven't spoken to her in a while. She's an amazing human being. She is Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Bowling Green State University, and she does so much research, and it's a thankless job, trust me. I mean, if you think about what she researches. She looks at abortion, and especially post-abortive issues. And she is responding, and she did an interview, an excellent interview with the Catholic News Agency. You can find it at CatholicNewsAgency.com. Andrew will put the link to this story that was posted earlier this week on our archive section later today. She is responding to the so-called Turnaway study and how flawed it is. So this Turnaway study is a book, was put into a book actually, that was just released last month in June. Let me just read a few of the lead paragraphs in the CNA story. A developmental psychologist telling the Catholic News Agency that a study claiming most women do not regret their abortion is flawed and does not accurately represent how women experience abortion. The study known as the Turnaway Study is the subject of a new book titled The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, and the Consequences of Having or Being Denied an Abortion. It was released by Ph.D. Diane Green Foster, published on June 2nd. The study originating from, and you know what you always say, and you should know, consider the source, Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health, which is based at the University of California, San Francisco. Now, Janet Moran and I have done a number of discussions and interviews on this, on the Catholic View for Women, on this Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. Just the title alone should tell you their agenda. And Dr. Priscilla takes a look at this quote-unquote study and has some very interesting information of why it is so flawed. And what's so sad to me is that you put a book out there and you tell people continually that abortion is no big deal, it's fine, blah, 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 or in the opposite here, if you're denied an abortion, that you're going to be going through all this trauma. If you don't present an accurate picture, more people are going to suffer, both men and women. And more men are getting involved in organizations such as the Silent Memoir Awareness Campaign. And a big problem I see right here in the title of the book, The Turnaway Study, 10 Years, 1,000 Women, well, many women and men don't openly talk about their abortion until many years later. I remember a priest telling me that a woman came to him. She was 80 years old. And she had never, ever talked about her abortion. She went to him for confession because he gave a homily about life. And she felt moved and she felt touched and she felt that she was loved and cared for and that she could be forgiven. And so she went to confession, to confess an abortion. And this was an 80-year-old woman. How many women and men keep this suppressed? Because they're told repeatedly by whomever, by friends, by the media, by the culture, by experts, even by counsel called counselors, oh, it can't be related to your abortion, or it's never discussed. And yet there are so many signs of people struggling. We are a wounded, we are walking wounded. If you just think of the numbers of abortions, thousands every day in this country, and all of the issues related, and we know this from the countless stories we've done here on EWTN, all across the board on different shows. The Catholic View for Women, we've done a lot of work on that. Jeanette's done a lot of work on this. Janet's done this on Defending Life. This is a huge issue that's ignored. And thanks be to God for people like Dr. Coleman who have the courage to say, no, this isn't correct. And we're hurting, not helping people. So she joins us at 15 minutes past the hour, and then looking forward to telling you about another really cool online event. John Meyer, the executive director of the Napa Institute. Now, normally they have their summer conference, obviously, in beautiful Napa, California. But because of the pandemic, they can't do it this year, so they're switching gears and taking it online. And he'll give us an idea of what's coming up on the virtual conference and how you can get involved. That is our program for today. I do hope that you can stay tuned for the entire hour. We also have a lot of news this morning. Never a dull moment, let me tell you. A lot of news going on. And so let's get to that right now. Again, this is Thursday, July 16th, 2020. You're listening to Catholic Connection, a co-production of the Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Networks. Let's see what's happening today. Well, a California Mission Church founded by St. Sarah is now being elevated. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles announcing yesterday that the Holy Father has elevated the San Buenaventura Mission in Ventura to the rank of minor basilica. The Archbishop of Los Angeles, Jose Gomez, making the announcement prior to celebrating daily mass at the Mission Garden. Gomez saying a basilica is a place where the mercy of God has been proclaimed in the name of Jesus Christ. It is a place where sinners have been saved and saints have been made, and the kingdom of God has moved forward. The Marian Shrine at Lourdes, as Vatican Radio's Christopher Wells explains, will host its first ever online worldwide pilgrimage today, the anniversary of the final apparition of Our Lady to Saint Bernadette.
Over 160 years ago, in 1858, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to a young French girl, Bernadette Soubirous, in the small town of Lourdes in the foothills of the Pyrenees Mountains. A sanctuary soon arose at the site of the apparitions, and in the years and decades since, millions of pilgrims have visited the shrine, and thousands of miracles of healing and conversion have been reported. In 2020, 2 years after the 150th anniversary of the apparitions, Lourdes is virtually empty. For the first time in its history, the sanctuary was closed to pilgrims, a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Although it is now reopened, healthcare and sanitary measures in place mean that only a very limited number of pilgrims can visit the shrine in person. In response, the Sanctuary of Our Lady of Lourdes is organizing the first ever worldwide virtual pilgrimage, set for Thursday, July 16th, the anniversary of the final apparition of the Blessed Virgin to Saint Bernadette. Millions of people from around the world are expected to take part through television, radio, internet, and other means of social communication, gathered together under the sign of hope and solidarity. Multi-generational and multicultural, the Lourdes United e-Pilgrimage will bring together all those who in the four corners of the world see Lourdes as a beacon of faith, commitment, sharing, and hope, explains the website dedicated to the event. The Lourdes United Pilgrimage will run from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. local time and will feature celebrations, processions, rosaries, and prayer. A new live television program will be broadcast from the grotto from 4 to 6 p.m., with religious and civil personalities sharing their stories of the role Lourdes plays in their lives. Speakers will also focus on themes of solidarity, fraternity, commitment, aid, hope, and the search for meaning in life. While live music, archive videos, and behind-the-scenes reports will help better explain the mission of the Sanctuary of Lourdes. With the Lourdes United e-Pilgrimage, the message of Our Lady of Lourdes will continue to resound throughout the world. I'm Christopher Wells.
And don't forget, as we mentioned earlier, EWTN broadcasting the Mass and other events today. So make sure you check out our website at EWTN.com. A Nigerian civil society group says violence against Christians in Nigeria on the rise. The International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law estimating over 1,200 Christians have been killed by jihadists and other herdsmen during the first 6 months of the year. The announcement was made after nearly two dozen additional Christians were killed last weekend. A new report by the organization based on credible local and foreign media reports, government accounts, reports from international rights groups, and eyewitnesses. Officials say they're worried about genocidal crimes being committed in that part of the world. President Trump is planning an announcement next week, he says, on how his administration intends to deal with crime in Democratic-led cities, including Chicago. Speaking to reporters yesterday, the president saying they are going to straighten things out in cities where leaders, he says, have lost control.
It's almost like they think this is going to be this way forever. We're in Chicago. 68 people were shot. and 18 died last week. We're not going to put up with that.
Trump also citing recent issues with protesters in Seattle, Minneapolis, and Portland. Earlier this week, the president said Chicago is worse than Afghanistan. He has been hinting for some time that he can reduce crime in big cities such as Chicago. In New York, surveillance video from outside City Hall appears to show protesters, according to several reports, receiving a small shipment of bats before anti-cop activists clashed with officers on the Brooklyn Bridge yesterday morning. Fox News reporting the delivery was made by a car parked on the street near City Hall, with one man seen retrieving six bats from the trunk, according to the footage provided by sources. Fox is reporting that police sources are telling them the bats were delivered so the anti-cop activists could confront a unity rally that was taking place over the Brooklyn Bridge into Manhattan. The unity rally included clergy, law enforcement, and community activists. Additional news reports say it's unclear if the City Hall protesters used the bats in the wild Brooklyn Bridge brawl between opposing protesters, but at least one was recovered after the dust settled, according to police sources. They say a cane was also used in the brawl, with one counter-demonstrator seen on video using the object to hit cops over the head during the melee on the bridge. In all, four police officers, including the chief of the department, Terrence Monahan, he's the highest-ranking New York police uniformed officer, and one civilian, were injured in the clash. President Trump picking up a major endorsement from law enforcement, the National Association for Police Organizations announcing it's throwing its support behind the president in this year's election. The group saying it recognizes a top executive's steadfast and very public support for officers on the front lines. The city of Milwaukee says it's going to spend about $40 million on the Democratic National Convention, even though most of that event won't happen in Milwaukee. The mayor, Tom Barrett, saying yesterday the city will need to provide security and logistics for the parts of the event that will happen in town. Governor Larry Hogan says Maryland has uncovered a massive, sophisticated criminal enterprise involving more than 47,000 fraudulent unemployment claims totaling more than $500 million. Hogan says the state labor department began investigating after detecting an unusual spike in out-of-state pandemic unemployment assistance claims.
Not only did we identify the fraudulent activity here in Maryland and save the taxpayers $500 million, we also helped the federal authorities uncover related illegal activity in states across the country.
Investigators finding stolen identities and personal information from national data breaches are being used to file for unemployment benefits in Maryland. Hogan saying the state's unemployment system was not breached and no Maryland residents' personal information was compromised. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is prioritizing, he says, support for schools when it comes time for a new coronavirus relief bill.
My view is the next package that we develop ought to be geared toward doing everything we possibly can to make it possible for the kids to be back in school. Because if kids are not back in school, then you got jobs issues.
He acknowledged a heavy emphasis on education will be costly in the next package, McConnell saying he is open to more direct checks, but added leaders made a mistake in the last bill, which made it more attractive, he says, for people to stay home than to work. And Moderna, as Matt Madison tells us, is launching its late-stage coronavirus vaccine trial later this month.
A post on clinicaltrials.gov today showed 30,000 participants across 87 locations will take part in the biotech company's experiment. Patients will receive a 100 microgram dose of the potential vaccine on the first day and another nearly a month later. The medicine will contain genetic material called messenger RNA, which is a genetic code that tells cells what to build. The trial will begin on July 27th.
The governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, urging residents to mask up to prevent the spread of COVID-19. He made the plea yesterday during a statewide address about a surge of virus cases.
I'm asking each one of you, wherever you live in Ohio, whatever county, whatever the alert color of your county, to wear a mask every time you go out in public.
And he says a partial shutdown of some businesses looming without residents' actions. Postal workers have their hands full with more than 330,000 vote-by-mail ballots for the August 18th primary, leaving the Miami-Dade Elections Department today. The Supervisor of Elections, Christina White, already anticipating a spike in interest going into the 2020 election cycle, but then came the coronavirus.
We've had over 150,000 people just over the last couple months request a ballot. So that tells us that more than likely the majority of our voters in this election anyway will vote from home.
Monday is the deadline to register to vote or change party affiliation, with August 8th being the last day to request a vote by mail ballot. And Phil Hewlett tells us the annual Rose Parade not going to happen on New Year's Day.
Organizers announced that they have canceled the Pasadena tradition for the first time since World War II, all because of the coronavirus pandemic. In a news release, they said the decision was made with reluctance and disappointment and in accordance with Governor Newsom's reopening schedule. The parade of floats that happens before the Rose Bowl game has been canceled only three times before since it began in 1891, all during the Second World War.
A jeweler from Michigan closing up shop and burying $1 million in jewels and antiques to launch what he calls Treasure Quest. The fortune is buried across the Great Lakes State and even in the Upper Peninsula, and it begins on August 1st when treasure hunters can start the hunt. More information and registration available at the website johnnystreasurequest.com. Sounds interesting. I wonder if they're going to make that into a reality show. Yeah, could be. When we come back, we're going to be talking to a woman that I think is just amazing and so dedicated to truth. Her name is Dr. Priscilla Coleman, and she does research regarding post-abortion issues. And she will tell us, as she has before, what we don't know about what the other side is promoting in abortion can and does hurt us. Dr. Priscilla Coleman, up next. Stay tuned.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
My thanks to the Catholic Foundation of Michigan for the very critical financial support they offered Ave Maria Radio during these recent months. The Catholic Foundation is another excellent example of the laity taking co-responsibility for the Church. It's a group of lay men and women who realized the need to provide perpetual funding for Catholic apostolates. So they went ahead and founded the foundation in 2016. It worked in close conjunction with the Archdiocese of Detroit, but is independent of it. Its board of trustees is comprised of laity who are expert in using temporal treasure to help build God's eternal kingdom. As St. Paul says, the body of Christ is made up of many members. The better each of us employs our specific God-given skills, the more fully the Church is able to prefigure the coming kingdom. So thanks again to the Catholic Foundation of Michigan for their direct support, but also for creatively working to meet the financial needs of apostolic work.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GET-CURO.
So glad that we can give a voice to truth, and the voice of our beautiful sister, Dr. Priscilla Coleman, does such great work, and we need to get it out there. And this latest book, based on a study, I don't even want to call it a study, it's just ridiculous. All the interviews I've done over the years and all the programs that we've done here on EW10, The Catholic View for Women, Women of Grace, and Defending Life, and of course our weekly show, Pro-Life Weekly every week, you know, with Catherine. I mean, so much research out there to show just the opposite of what this study is saying. And so many people telling their stories over and, oh, look at Abby Johnson, right? Look at so many people. Look at Dr. Nathanson. So many stories about people who were either in the abortion industry, working in it, had an abortion, and realized that abortion was not only harming them, but so many other people. And those voices are suppressed, and it's important for us to get the information so we can share it. And that's why I was grateful that Dr. Priscilla Coleman was available to speak with us about this quote-unquote study that just came out that was turned into a book. Dr. Priscilla Coleman is a professor of human development and family studies at Bowling Green State University, not far from me here in southeastern Michigan. Priscilla, you're a blessing. Thank you for your hard work and your continued efforts to get the truth out. So first of all, let's talk about what I always was told in journalism school. My father even told me that growing up, and when I told him I wanted to be a reporter, he said, always consider the source and follow the money. And we can certainly say that in this case. So let's talk about the Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health Center based at the University of California, San Francisco. Let's give folks the idea of what this is all about, this location, this entity.
Okay, well, it's a center that was specifically developed and designed and funded to support research designed to demonstrate that restrictions on abortion aren't founded and that they're adverse to women and women need free access. And so it's been about 15 years or so, I think, since the study actually began. And over this time period, they've turned out at least 50 journal articles, all using the same data set, looking at different variables, looking at different time periods. The longest time period the women were followed was 5 years. But this center was largely funded by Warren Buffett. He donated at least $88 million to this effort. And it really is amazing that with that kind of money, they couldn't produce a better study. It's absolutely flawed in so many glaring ways. It really is ridiculous, and it's so unfair to women because the average person doesn't know what constitutes a reliable, valid study. You need to take a course or read about it. So when the news, blurbs come out there, all they're seeing is the bottom line from terribly flawed study. So, it's just so unfair. It's unfair to the women. It's unfair to society. It's a perversion of science. It's on so many levels, it's distressing.
Well, before we go into the break, we have about 4 minutes left. So give us a couple of points in terms of why this is such a flawed study.
Okay. First of all, listeners may not be familiar with the group. So basically they compared women who had first trimester abortions with women who had second trimester near limit abortions. Each state has a different limit, gestational limit for denying abortions. So the second group were close to that limit, and then the third group were women who were denied an abortion because they were past the gestational limit. So probably the most troubling aspect of the study from a scientific perspective relates to the numbers of women who agreed to participate initially. They only were able to retain 37.5% of all the women invited to be in the study. And then across the five-year period, another 42% dropped out. So the final sample, and this varies a little bit study to study because it depends on what time period they went to, and as the study progressed, more dropped out. So by the end of the fifth year, they had retained only 17% of the sample. And in any other area of science, you could not publish a study where you've lost 83% of your original sample because the ones who remain are not going to be representative of women generally or in the population. There's, tons of evidence, tons of basic science that shows that samples that are that small are just not generalizable. They tend to be women who are more stable, who are willing to participate, who believe in what you're doing. I mean, there's a lot of biases between those who participate and those who don't. And so normally you would like to see like 70 to 80% retained in order to draw any conclusions. That's a big issue. Another really problematic aspect was how they measured the variables. There's so many of their studies, but in their JAMA Psychiatry 2015 study, they looked at anxiety and depression, and they measured those variables with just six items. And that's not considered acceptable in science when we have very lengthy, well-developed, well-established measures that are able to discriminate women who actually have those disorders from those who don't, that are consistent with the diagnostic and statistical manual of the American Psychological Association. So, and in the literature, there are so many well-developed instruments. Why they just chose these simplistic ones is beyond me. They measured self-esteem and life satisfaction with a single item. You just don't do that. You could not get a paper published if you had such superficial assessments. So those are two of the really big problems. Another one is the gestational limits varied from the cutoffs from 10 weeks to 17 weeks. And so you're lumping women together who are at very different points of pregnancy. And we have a lot of literature showing the longer that the pregnancy progresses prior to a termination, the more traumatic it is for the woman. She's feeling the baby.
Right. Let's take a quick break, Priscilla, and we'll get back to this. We're talking with Dr. Priscilla Coleman about a very flawed study that was turned into a book and published by a very pro-abortion center, the Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. That should give you an idea of where all this is coming from. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. We'll put the link of the story from Catholic News Agency with our guest, Dr. Priscilla Coleman, on our archive section, and it was published just a few days ago. Expert on abortion and mental health says turnaway study is flawed. We're speaking with Dr. Priscilla Coleman from Bowling Green State University. This is just so frustrating, Priscilla. I can't imagine the patience you must have, the patience of Job, to deal with this, because what you said earlier, the overall concern and point is that people are not getting accurate information when they're considering.
Right.
If they're considering, feel pressured to, God forbid, consider an abortion, they don't have accurate information, because a lot of them are not going deeper. They see something or hear something in the media. Or also, I wonder, what about those who have had an abortion and are struggling, but it's not being acknowledged? And so they see this and they think, oh my goodness, it's got to be me. There's something wrong with me. So unfair.
Exactly. Yeah, instead of being informed that a certain percentage of women will have depression or be at risk for suicide or have anxiety, which several states now do look at the literature fairly and women are counseled. But when they don't receive any information beforehand, they're not really screened, then all of a sudden they're suffering afterwards. When all they can find on the internet or all they heard from the clinic was that, this is nothing. It'll be gone and you'll go on with your life, and they can't. And so then they feel aberrant. They feel, shameful. And there really isn't anywhere for them to go. They can't go back to the clinic. So they're not helpful. And often they, don't want to share it with family or friends or even their own family physician because of the shame and the guilt that surrounds it. So they suffer in isolation. And one of the strongest outcomes we see associated with abortion across so many studies, really large studies, international studies, is that substance abuse is probably the strongest correlate with abortion. That's women then can self-medicate. We see high rates of alcohol, prescription drugs, illicit drugs. We published a study in 2002 in an excellent medical journal, the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and we found that women who had a prior abortion compared to the women who had a prior birth in a subsequent pregnancy, they were 10 times more likely to use marijuana in that pregnancy and so the next pregnancy. So there's a lot of data showing substance abuse is how they kind of cope quietly alone.
What I thought was very telling, and I looked at this figure and I said, oh, come on, give me a break. In January 2020, the authors of the study reporting that approximately 95% of women who had abortions did not regret their decision 5 years after the fact. 95%? Seriously?
Yeah, that's ridiculous, and it's because their sample is so small, and it was craftily put together, and and regret is a variable that it's not very useful anyway, because you could experience regret and that just shifts over time, and so maybe when they polled them a few months after the abortion, they didn't regret it, but maybe they regretted it later on. I mean, it's really not a very good variable. It's conducive to so much shifting over time. But the, what we really need to know and what we do know, what we really need to get out is all the excellent work that looks at depression and anxiety and suicide risk and, you know, the serious trauma that can result.
Yeah, it's the other thing, too, and you and I were talking about this during the break, is that so many men and women don't even talk about it. I mean, 5 years is a blip, you know, on the screen, the time screen. They don't bring it up until, because they don't know. They're experiencing these things, or maybe they won't even have it. There was one woman, I'll never forget, when I was covering the March for Life for EW10, and we were at the Supreme Court steps with the women and men giving their testimony, and one woman got up there and she said, I was the perfect Planned Parenthood poster child. I had my abortion, you know, went on with my life, finished college, got married, and then she said things slowly started to fall apart, but that didn't happen until 10 years later. And then she was having such a hard time making a connection. What was it? And then she had a trigger event, and I can't remember what the trigger event, but you said there are often triggers that bring out the regret.
Right, like a later pregnancy, or when maybe, you know, there could be a woman who's learning about fetal development in a college course, and, you know, because they don't get exposed to, you know, the stage and, you know, how far developmentally, how, you know, what the baby looks like and what it's capable of. And, you know, now we do have laws that require that information or an ultrasound. And so there's at least in a, you know, a certain percentage of the states across the country, women are getting at least a little more information before they consent to it. And we're establishing waiting periods, which are helpful too, because then if they are just getting the information at the clinic, they'll have anywhere between 24 and 72 hours to go home, find out more, think about it. And the studies on waiting periods that are out there, not too many, but there were some good ones that came out of Utah that indicated about 8% of women will decide over the course of the waiting period not to terminate. And so I think that what happens afterwards, like long term, we don't know a lot about. There haven't been that many longitudinal studies. But there was one that came out looking at women at menopause. And so that was another point where women sort of revisited their abortions with a lot of sadness and regret because, you know, their hope to have a baby had ended. And so...
Wow. So in terms of when we see a study like this, how can we get the word out about the truth? Where can we go for more information about your great work? And what should we do with this, Priscilla? What do you think?
Well, I have a nonprofit I established several years ago, though. It's called the World Expert Consortium for Abortion Research and Education. And the plan with WeCare was to foster collaboration among researchers throughout the world, get truthful information out when a study like this comes out, just have a, you know, a critique that comes out very timely so people could have the information, get, you know, kind of the truth, the other side of it. I haven't kept it up like I should. I've been so busy with legal work. I'm currently serving as an expert on 15 cases nationwide.
Wow.
And really active work with Missouri and Indiana. And I think I worked straight from May till October last year, 10-hour days. So I haven't been giving WeCare the attention it needs. But I believe I did post a critique on the Turnaway a few years ago.
So where do we find WeCare? What's the website? Is there a link we can follow?
It's just WeCareExperts.org.
WeCareExperts.org. Okay. All right. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, this information is so important. And you were talking about the waiting periods. If you think about it, Priscilla, any other type of surgery, they tell you, go home, think about it. They never, unless it's an emergency surgery, God forbid you go to the hospital, you're in an accident, or they do a test and you find out you have you know, congestive heart issues, and so they send you right down the hall, literally, almost, to have... That's happened before with many people, I'm sure. But in most cases, any type of surgery, minor or major, you're given a time to get a second opinion and think about it.
Yeah, and look at the alternate... You know, there are alternate routes. There's adoption, there's birth. I mean, they need to really be fully informed about all the possibilities. And it's not informed consent. If a woman comes into a clinic, she's in a crisis state, she's given a little bit of information, she doesn't have time to assimilate it, she can't really voluntarily consent to that procedure.
Amen.
And oftentimes there's actual coercion going on as well.
Yeah. Priscilla, we're out of time, honey, but let me again direct people. Give us your website one more time.
Okay, it's WeCareExperts.org.
WeCareExperts.org. Dr. Priscilla Coleman, check that out. We'll be right back. If you go on my Facebook page, Facebook at Mrs. Teresa Tomeo, every week after I do my talks that we post online on Wednesday nights, the talks related to my new book, Conquering Coronavirus, How Faith Can Put Your Fears to Rest, we make the series available, obviously, to anyone. It's posted on the Facebook page. But then we also post a series of questions related to the topic. And I read one of the posts that we put. One of the questions was, how has your faith community reached out to you during and after the pandemic? I mean, obviously, we're still going through a lot with the pandemic, but, you know, during that whole time when the churches were shut down and whatnot. And as of this morning, I think we had a reach of close to 8,000 and close to 200 comments, and it was so encouraging to see the creativity of the priests and the bishops and different apostolates reaching out to people. And this is also true for our friends at the Napa Institute. John Meyer is the executive director, and he joins us because normally they have this beautiful conference in the Napa area of California, but obviously because of issues with the pandemic, they can't do that this year. But John, I would think that in some ways, this is a blessing because it's open then to more people, because any conference has its limits if you're doing it at, you know, a hotel or a parish. So you're going to be able to have a lot more people join you, I hope. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. And that's absolutely right. So our founder, Archbishop Shaffer, had founded us so that we could address issues of faith and culture. And this year more than ever, that's more important than it's ever been. So to reach more people is really maybe part of God's plan here, which is why we look at these things as we're not going to worry about tomorrow, just figure out what God needs us to do today. And I think that being able to reach more people at a time when the culture is in such crisis and we as Catholics need to know how to respond with a uniquely Catholic lens on all these issues, it's important that we get that information out there.
So when is it scheduled? And is it doing it the same dates that it was scheduled for to have it in person?
No, just because we had to cancel so late on the in-person, we pushed it back a little. So it's August 14th and 15th, and there'll be a live component both of those days, and then there'll be a library of other talks that'll be pre-recorded and available as well. And they'll talk about everything from giving you hope and encouragement in your faith during this difficult time to the issues in the culture and how we need to view those as Catholics and how we can formulate arguments to evangelize this culture.
Well, I'm looking at your website, which is napa-institute.org, and the conference is right there on the home page. And I love the theme, Finding Hope in the New America, and your speakers are amazing, and many people will be familiar with them because they're regulars here on EWTN, including our own Father Spitzer, who is just, to me, just incredible. Incredible. And then Dr. Yeah. Scott Hahn, Curtis Martin, George Weigel, Ryan Anderson, and you also have Cardinal Pell.
Yeah. We thought Cardinal Pell was very fitting, given the you know, kind of persecution he had. It's no better person to talk about how we're persecuted for our faith and the modern culture. You know, he's gone through so much and he's done it in such a holy way. I remember when he went to prison, he said, you know, I haven't taken my retreat yet this year. And if only we all looked at the struggles we're facing right now with that same level of faith. So yeah, trying to get everybody that's going to give us that message of encouragement, Father Spitzer and Cardinal Pell. But then also, you know, Arthur Brooks and others that can really address the division in the culture and how we as Catholics are uniquely positioned to make an impact.
We're speaking with John Meyer, the executive director of the Napa Institute, on their upcoming virtual conference. Just check it out at napa-institute.org. John, let's talk about, you mentioned the Institute was founded by the amazing Archbishop Shaphew. So how long have you been in existence, and let's talk about the work that you've done over the last few years.
So 10 years. This was going to be our 10th anniversary. And it started as just a conference in the Napa Valley, as you mentioned earlier. And since then, we've grown over the last 10 years to include a second flagship event, which is our principal entrepreneurship event that looks at issues of business and faith in New York every year. And then we do about 7 or 8 other events a year that will deal with either symposiums on individual cultural issues, or we have a large series of priest events that we do. We put about 700 priests annually through formation on things like homiletics and scripture, parish management. So we host those. Last year we hosted 3 of those conferences for priests. But then, you know, we'll also host things throughout the year for politicians. We had a special symposium on church reform and what it really looks like. So kind of as needed issues of faith and culture. And it's really Archbishop Chaffee's idea. Father Spitzer is also one of our founders, and then Ken Bush. The three of them kind of saw the need for us to live authentically and to equip the leaders so that they not only knew what the church believes, but they could express why it believes what it believes.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Father Spitzer, I could listen and read him forever. I love him on Father Spitzer's Universe with Doug Keck. I love that show. Now, something that really is neat, you're offering the opportunity to host a watch party. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, one of the things that we can't duplicate virtually is community. And Napa's built on three communities. It's formation, liturgy, and community. And that community aspect, we thought, well, if people want to invite people into their homes, we would send them some wine, encourage them to have a dinner party. You know, we're talking about putting together maybe some questions on some of the live session talks so that you can, once you watch these talks, you can then have dinner with a group of friends and you can sit around the table and go deeper into the topic. You know, we want to encourage people to build that community, but also use that community as a source of support and as a source of continued formation.
So how do they register for the conference and also to host a watch party? And all the information is there online, right?
If you go to www.napa-institute.org and you go onto our attend section on top, you'll see it in the events. Also, if you just follow us on social media, there's, I think, regular posts on there as well. Institute is on all the social media channels.
How's registration doing so far?
Great. We just opened it yesterday. So,
good. Okay.
Yesterday we had a surge right away, and we're going to continue to release more speakers in the coming days. We have a good chunk confirmed right now and a good chunk that should be confirmed in the next 3 or 4 days.
Wow, that's awesome. And so there's an early registration discount. Is that still in effect?
It is. So you get $40 off if you register in the next 2 weeks. So that brings it down to $149.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat if you think about it, because the quality of the speakers and the different opportunities to learn about this whole theme of hope for America, a lot of people, unfortunately, I mean, I'll go anywhere. I'll travel. I'll get on a plane tomorrow. I love to travel. But there are people who are concerned about it, and I understand that, and maybe people who might be in one of those vulnerable categories. And so this makes it, I think, even more accessible to those who maybe are not quite comfortable with travel right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, it supports our mission so that we can continue to do this going forward in the future. So there's a lot of reasons the digital conference makes a lot of sense. But to your point, I think people, the more people that can see this content this year, the better. Because I think God's really calling us to go out there and be his voice in the culture.
How do you decide, John, the themes that you're going to cover in your conferences each year?
So we have a speaker committee made up of some of our board members, and we discern, and sometimes it's easier than others, what we feel Catholic, what is the most, what are the biggest issues Catholic leaders are facing in the culture. And this year on this particular conference, we put together a little speaker committee of George Weigel and Fran Mayer and Ryan Anderson, and we said, all right, we have just a month to put this together. What are all the issues right now, and how can we address them? So it was. It's all done by committee and by people who I count on to be much smarter than I am.
Well, I think the whole idea of hope is so important, because a lot of people are feeling hopeless when we think about, okay, we thought we were just getting over this whole COVID thing, and then things start to heat up again, and then we see the civil unrest and the attacks on the church, and especially recently with some fires and some damage being done to the saint statues and the statues of Our Lady. You just look out there, and it's like a country, John, that we don't even recognize in some areas.
100%, yeah. It's the thing that we're going to do is we're going to address all these issues, whether it be the socialism or some of these social movements, but we're also going to go to just addressing what you said there, and that's hope in the Lord, because I think what I said at the beginning of the call is very important for people to realize, and that is that there's a lot of things to worry about there out there right now, but worrying doesn't get us anywhere. So what we can do is we can look at today and the present moment and just ask ourselves, what is God trying to use me for right now? And that question is something I hope this conference will answer for a lot of people, too. It's given that hope that, you know, we're an eternal people, our hope is in the Lord, and instead of worrying about tomorrow, I just need to ask myself, how is God trying to use me today?
Now, once you register for the conference, are you able to go back to the talks, John, if you want to revisit them at any point?
You are. So there's a mix of a lot of the talks are live. Some of them are only recorded. You'll have those talks, all of them, the live and the recorded talks, for I think it's 2 months. It's till October 15th that you'll have to watch them. So even if you miss a live session, you won't obviously be able to participate in the Q&A, but you'll be able to go back and watch the entire thing. And if you want to go back and revisit a talk, you can watch it as well. But the idea is for people to watch as many of the talks as they can, but then use it as a library for all of the issues out there. So maybe today I need some help on my prayer, or maybe today I need some help responding to a friend or neighbor on socialism or something else that's going on in the culture. I can go back and watch a Catholic expert talk about that topic.
And I like the fact that in the live sessions you are able to submit questions, correct?
You are, yeah. So every speaker will speak for 20 minutes, and then they'll sit down with us for some Q&A. What you can submit during the talk or even during the Q&A session, we'll be taking the questions.
Can Father Spitzer do it in 20 minutes?
Yeah, well...
He reminds me of Steve Ray. Every time Steve is on the program, he's so cute. I say, Steve, when the music comes up, you got to wrap it up. And it never fails. He always goes through that. It's just funny. It's funny. They're both brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got a lot of great things to say.
He does.
We usually give him some leeway.
Yeah, well, he's amazing. He's one of my favorite speakers, and I just think he's just so knowledgeable and also very down-to-earth, brilliant, brilliant man. Well, thanks for doing this. I'm sorry you can't have it in person. I've never been. I've always wanted to go, but I look forward to not only the online conference, but when you are going to have this again in beautiful Napa Valley. There is something about being together in person, but thanks be to God we do have the Internet. Okay, before we let you go, John, give us registration details again and the dates, August 14th through the 15th for the virtual conference, and we just go to the website to register?
Yeah, just go to the website, napa-institute.org. Click on attend. You'll see it right there. It's a very easy registration process. 14th and 15th will be live sessions, but you'll have 2 months to watch all of those and the recorded sessions.
Awesome. Well, keep up the great work. God bless you, and we hope it's a huge success and look forward to hearing more about it again. Napa-institute.org. They're doing their conference online this year, and great speakers. Father Spitzer, you heard, of course, Dr. Scott Hahn, Cardinal Pell, and so many others. This year's Napa Institute going online. Go to napa-institute.org. Thanks, John. God bless you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, and we'll be right back to wrap up and let you know what's coming on a Friday morning edition of Catholic Connection right here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay tuned. Thanks to those sustaining members, brand new members, and of course to all who've recently renewed your membership. A big group hug over the microphone. Gregory and Christine, thank you from Cass City, Michigan. Darren and Tina from Saline. John from Ann Arbor. Salvatore from Royal Oak. And Florence from Clarkston. Did you know that you too may renew that membership, become a sustaining member, or just make a one-time gift by going to AveMariaRadio.net or clicking on that donate button on the Ave Maria Radio app?
When I heard other business owners say they finally found someone in the credit card industry they can trust, I wondered how he could help me. So when Mark from Schisler CPC offered to show me where all the money goes for credit card processing with a free analysis of my business, I jumped on it. He reviewed how the industry works, where we could save, and offered a no-contract guarantee on savings and excellent customer service. I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. Schisler CPC. Trust in them.
More information available on the Ave Maria website under Sponsor Business Directory.
Missed the name of the guest on today's Catholic Connection or his or her book? Log on to AveMariaRadio.net. Click Archive in the upper right corner. Select and search Catholic Connection and explore from there. You can hear past episodes, delve into bios, read related articles, purchase books, and find links to websites, all by clicking on the show notes from each hour. Browse AveMariaRadio.net and bookmark it today. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
This year, our nation has grappled with a pandemic, experienced cultural tension, and witnessed Supreme Court rulings that threaten life, healthcare, religious freedom, and conscious rights. Join the Christ Medicus Foundation and the Catholic Medical Association July 18th for a free online conference addressing these issues and the future of Catholic healthcare. Register online for this free digital conference at CatholicHealthcareConference.com. That's CatholicHealthcareConference.com.
Thanks for tuning in on a Thursday morning and every day here at EWTN. Don't forget, the network is going to be carrying some of the beautiful events taking place at the first ever Lord's Pilgrimage Online. They're actually having a worldwide online event today. This is the anniversary of the final apparition of Our Lady to Bernadette Soubirous in the Pyrenees in the tiny town of Lourdes. And God willing, when we get back to travel, I hope that you put Lourdes on your bucket list because it is quite a place. It's just incredible. And not too long ago, the movie The Song of Bernadette was on, starring Jennifer Jones. I love that movie. And Vincent Price. I've seen it, I don't know, probably 15 times. I never get tired of it. Very, very well done. I think she even won the Academy Award for that. Okay, coming up tomorrow, there has been, for obvious reasons, as we're getting close to the school year, especially in states like Florida where they start their school year in August and a lot of college students going back in August, either going back online or going back in person. So what do pediatricians say? Well, Dr. Meg Meeker is going to be joining us tomorrow, and she's an author, speaker, and a pediatrician. There was an interesting report that Andrew pulled down for me from MSNBC, of all places, where their medical expert, another doctor, went and did interviews, online interviews, with five pediatricians from across the country. And they all said that they would send their children back to school. And as a matter of fact, many of them said their children are actually going back to school in the fall, physically going into the schools. And they explained their reasons why. And the story was on one of the websites that takes a critical look at the media, and it was fascinating because the anchor looked like a deer in the headlights. That wasn't what he was expecting, and he obviously looked disappointed because there's been an effort by some of the media to try to keep fear out there. But these doctors felt confident that if social distancing was in place and that other health regulations were in place, that their kids could go back to school, and thought about the necessity of going back to school and how important it is to their development. So we'll get the reaction from Dr. Meg Meeker, and then we also check in with Doug Keck on a Friday to let us know what's coming up with all the great programming. Can you believe moving into the second half of July already? Also, if you want a nice little shot in the arm, head to my Facebook page. I don't have time to share it with you right now, but facebook.com/Mrs. Teresa Tomeo. And if you go to the question section, how have you seen priests, religious, or other ministers reaching out to the faith community? All over 130 comments on all the good things that have been happening and how our faith community has been reaching out. So just thought you'd like to see that. Have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a Friday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.